Good morning. I believe fall is here for at least a couple of days before we make it back up to 80 midway through the week. Interestingly enough, what today's sermon is about, or at least partially, is how the sun, moon, and stars determine our seasons. And right now, apparently they're confused on what season we're supposed to be in North Carolina. We are going to continue our series today on the Lord of Creation, and out of all of them, for some reason, this was the hardest for me. My week got a little bit thrown off. I kept Elijah on Wednesday instead of Friday, and I love routine, and so when my routine got messed up, it threw off my sermon writing. I really struggled with it, and honestly, there's a lot in here that is coming from little Elijah and some of the stuff that he's done. So there's going to be a Batman clip that we're going to show today. And my opening funny thing is Elijah as well. But day four is about the creation of light-bearing bodies and what their purposes are. And right now, Elijah's at that age where he is fascinated with light. When we go into the room, he has to turn the light on. If there's a flashlight, he has to have it and shine it everywhere, including right in Mommy and Daddy's face, or even his face. And then, of course, Nana, my mom, gave him a lightsaber on Friday, and he says, I've got the power. That's when he turns it on, I've got the power. So we were driving home from table gathering on Friday night, and the back of our vehicles lit up blue from that lightsaber. People thought it was Randy's vehicle going up the road. Yeah. He loves anything that makes light, but one thing he does not like, and I think most of us can agree with this, is the sun in the morning when we don't want to wake up. I'll be taking him to my parents, and he'll say, Daddy, son, turn it off, turn it off. Like I can turn off the sun, because it's shining in his face, you know, as we're driving down the road. And I'm like, son, I can't turn the sun off. I'm sorry. Only God can do that. Maybe I can pray that the sun would stand still as Joshua did. But, you know, that response of, son, turn it off, Daddy, turn it off. That's the response we get from the world sometimes as Christians who are called to bear the light of Jesus. The church is the light of the world. Here's what Jesus said in Matthew 5:14. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hilltop cannot be hidden. But as we talked about briefly last week, we live in a post-Christian nation that's kind of moved past Christianity, moved past believing in God. And today, they don't want to hear or see the light that we are trying to shine. In fact, they would rather turn us off than to let it shine. They don't want us to hear the truth. They don't want us to speak the truth. They don't want us to expose darkness. We are effectively, using a culture word here, we are effectively being canceled. When we try to tell people that an unborn baby is a life that should be protected, we are canceled and labeled women haters. When we try to tell people that there are only two genders, we are canceled and labeled as transphobic. When we try to do good to people out of the love of Christ, we are canceled because of our beliefs. Nowadays, we have TikToks and Facebook Reels, and often some of them that pop up online is these Christians trying to tell people about Jesus or trying to do something good for someone. And as soon as they can tell that they're coming from a religious standpoint, people turn them off and move on. There's a couple of churches in our district that have experienced some of this backlash on higher levels than other churches in our district. One of them is a church that used to be called United City Greensboro. They had a coffee shop that they called Union Coffee, and it was located in downtown Greensboro. And the idea was that the church would run this coffee shop, and if there's any proceeds from the coffee shop, it'd go right back into loving the community, showing the love of Christ. Well, one news agency got a hold that they are a conservative church and did all types of articles about them, and eventually it led to them having to sell the coffee shop And they actually changed the name of the church. I don't know if that was this is why or not. But they ended up having to sell the coffee shop. So now there's like an updated thing here where it says it's no longer a part of the church that Spencer Lohman, who was the pastor there, was a part of. That is really the conservative piece came regarding LGBTQ issues. That was where they were really attacked on things. One of our churches in Durham, though, had it at a whole other level. It's called Pioneers Church, and they had a pioneer coffee shop that was right in the middle of a, they called it, particularly queer part of Durham, according to this article. There's multiple articles you can read on this, all done by that Indie Week, whatever it is. But this is a screenshot I took this morning. This church, I just heard about them two district conferences ago, a couple years ago. This was a church that was actually planted by the United Methodist Church. And they created a coffee shop as well. They actually meet in the coffee shop. They use that space both for coffee and for, I think, coffee and other things. But they meet in the same spot. And this group found out that they were not LGBTQ affirming. And of course, the Methodists, United Methodists, had a split over this. And this group ended up leaving the Methodist Church and becoming a part of the Wesleyan Church because they refused to cave on issues of the truth. And it did not stop this group and other groups from trying to take them down. Here's part of the article, some of the stuff that they face. So for a while, across from the street, Motorco Music Hall, which faces Pioneers, hung large banners quoting LGBTQ plus activists, and rainbow flags dotted Greer Street. A petition condemning the church accrued more than 7,500 signatures. Motorco hosted a well-attended community forum about the church, and the Google map page of Pioneers was swamped with one-star reviews. There was actually a Instagram profile created just to attack this church, just to try to take this church down. And unfortunately, they were successful. This church eventually closed here in the last year, but they refused to cave. They refused to bow down to the people around them that didn't want to hear or see the light that they were trying to shine. And so should we let resistance stop us from being the light God has called us to be? My answer is no. We shouldn't be surprised by instances such as this, and this is just a couple. There's more than just this. We shouldn't be surprised by this because Jesus told us in Matthew 10:22 that you will be hated by everyone because of me. But the one who stands firm to the end will be the one that is saved. And so as we are going to work through today, and we're going to look at light-bearing bodies, the sun, moon, and stars, I'm reminded that we are light-bearing bodies. Those light-bearing bodies have a purpose, whether Elijah likes the sun's purpose or not. We have a purpose, whether the world likes it or not. So, let's read Genesis chapter 1, 14 through 19. It says, "Then God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and they shall serve as signs and for seasons, and for days and for years. They shall serve as lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on earth, and it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, the lesser light to govern the night, and he made the stars also. God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on earth and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a fourth day." Something to point out, he does not name the greater light and lesser light as the sun and moon. I'm assuming he leaves that up to Adam, and leaves that, not our Adam, Adam, leaves that up to, our Adam would have named it after some wrestler or something, but going to leave it up to Adam, human beings, to name the sun and the moon. But we know that's what he's talking about. Now, remember, at this point, God has already created light on day one. But now, the word for light used here is actually light-bearing bodies. I read one commentator, and this was something interesting to think about. One commentator said that what was created on the first day was light. Light itself. And God just took that light and put it in light-bearing bodies. So this light was kind of free-moving, freestanding, could go wherever, and I'm not sure we quite would understand it. But now, because anything that we think about that creates light, like these light bulbs, it has to come from something. But in that case, it's just there. The light is just there. It's come from God. He's created these light-bearing bodies, and verse 14 says that they are in the expanse of the heavens. One commentator compared it to luminaries. You know, you light the candle in the luminary, and it will show. These light-bearing bodies would serve a couple of purposes that we're going to look at today, and these purposes are not all that different from the purpose that we have in today's world as well. So here's my first point. On day four, God created the sun, moon, and stars to govern the day and night cycle by separating light from darkness. So the day and night cycle was already going on at the time, but it was controlled by whatever that light was on day one. Now that light has specific bearing bodies that would divide the day and the night. The sun and the moon serve as the primary means of communicating when the day and night cycle is. So at this point, God puts the sun at the exact distance it needs to be in order for us to survive. This is one of those things that confirms that there was an intelligent creator behind creation. Because if the sun was any closer, we would burn up. If the sun was any further away, this place would be covered in ice. But he put it exactly where it needed to be. Same thing for the moon. The moon was created, and at this point, I'm assuming, I never read this in anything, but I'm just assuming at this point, now the waves in the ocean starts moving. At this point, the water would have just been there. But the moon's what controls the tides. So at this point, I would say that the tides begin shifting and waves begin to be created. And of course, the stars are created. Zach's going to put up verse 16 because I want to point out something here. There's a whole lot of attention given to the greater light and the lesser light. And then it's a semicolon and it says, he made the stars also. It seems like the stars were an afterthought. Yet, the sun is amazing in itself. The moon is amazing in itself, but the stars are further away from us than the moon, further away from us than the sun, and they're amazing in itself, but they're an afterthought here. Why is that? Because actually, they're not that important. I'm going to talk about the stars briefly, and then I have a later on we're going to talk about the stars but in a different context. But the very fact that the stars seem like an afterthought here is on purpose. It is to communicate to us that stars are not that important in the grand scheme of things. And I think God possibly did this because, you know, God can see the beginning from the end. He knows the future. I think God knew how often people would look to the stars and to the sky to try to predict what was going to happen in the future. Now, these stars are a long ways away, and this is getting a little into science and a little into math. But today, we can see stars that are from galaxies that are further away than 10,000 light years. How could light from these distant stars travel that far when most would say that these stars are not 10,000 years old? Well, it's because God can operate outside of our idea of time and math. This kind of goes to what we talked about last week. God can throw the scientists off based off the age of the earth if he's already built age into the earth. Same thing with the stars. He could create the stars, and then one commentator said he accelerated the time that the light would travel so they would already be here and so that they could already see them from the earth's surface. Now, stars, they obviously come out at night, and they work in tandem with the moon to make clear when the nighttime is. The creation of the sun and the moon in particular, though, was to separate the light from the darkness. Think about it. Light enables us to operate and do things. Enables us to work, enables us to get up and see actually what we're doing, enables us to travel. Darkness, it's really hard to do anything in darkness other than sleep. And nowadays we have these things called light bulbs and electricity that actually keeps us up later at night, when if we didn't have light, we would already been asleep because we couldn't do anything. There was a study done. I meant to look it up, and I ran out of time and really just forgot. But I've mentioned it before. Before the invention of electricity and light, the average person got like, I think it was like 12 hours of sleep a night. It was way on up there. And now our average is down to like 6 hours. Why? Because of those things right there. We used to be controlled by when the sun came up and when the moon, or when the sun went down and when the moon came up. That was how your day was structured. That's how it's actually supposed to be. But now we work at night. We work because the light is always there. These light-bearing bodies, though, is what separates the light from the darkness. And that goes right along with what Christians are called to do. Christians should be that light that shines and ultimately separates it, the darkness. I don't have to tell you today or give you reasons why that I say this. There's a ton of darkness in this world. There's not a lot of good. Turn on the news, it's always something bad. On Facebook, it's always something bad. This world is in desperate need of something that is truly good. Not just that it makes them feel good, but that is truly good. And Jesus would tell us, it's you guys. He said in Matthew 5:14-16, I'm going to read the whole passage here. He says, you are the light of the world. You are a town that's built on a hill that cannot be hidden. He said, why would people light a lamp and put it under a bowl? Instead, they put it on its stand and give light to everyone in the house. He said, that's your purpose, not to cover your light, not to cover this candle so that we couldn't see the light, not to cover these bulbs, but to let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So how does he tell us that we let our light shine? By doing good deeds. Notice he doesn't say saying good things. He says doing good deeds. And in a world where people tend to have negative feelings towards the church, let's show them that the church is good. Let's show them that we really do love them, that we really do want what is best for them. Let's do good works. Let's win them over with our actions instead of just our words. See, the love that is needed, that is needed with them and that's needed within us, is the love that God has shown. It's an unconditional love. It's a sacrificial love. It is true love. That's what the world needs to see from us as the church. That's how we let our light shine. But we don't do these good deeds for our own glory. Notice it said, the last part, Jesus said, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. If you're doing stuff that gives you glory, then there's something wrong. We should be doing stuff that gives God glory. And this is so important for us to get, because this has been so abused by people in the past. Some churches, pastors, Christians, I would say politicians that say they're Christians, they do good works for their gain, or for their church's gain, or for their business's gain, or to earn votes. They want to make sure that they are seen feeding the poor, feeding the hungry, working at the soup kitchen, whatever it is. And people can see right through that. People can tell they're not doing it for the right purpose. And so today, that's why we can do good works, but people always think we have some other motive behind doing it. That's why I love our giveaways that we do, because we don't try to get them to do anything extra. We just give these things away out of the love that God has shown to us. We want to show it to others. And I believe over time it's going to continue to change people's minds about church. As individuals, here's what Jesus said in Matthew 6:3. When you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. So don't post it on Facebook. Don't do it to get glory. Don't get it to get attention. Do it all for the purpose of glorifying God. When I've been working with these other churches and we talk about doing a giveaway for the first time, you know, I don't know why this is, but some people are against giving stuff away. And I remind them that, they always say, well, how do you get people to come to church afterwards? And I was like, that's not what it's about. It's about us fulfilling the mission that God gave us, which is to love people. And so when you're doing this stuff, you yourself are doing an act of glorifying God because you are choosing to be obedient to God. So it's not always about what you get in return. That's the transactional mindset. No, here's the transaction. God has given me everything. I'm going to give a little bit in return by loving others. That's the transaction. So our job as the church is to glorify God by the way we live and by ultimately leading others to glorify Him as well. But another part of being the light that shines in the darkness, is being people of hope. People are walking around in this world with no hope. I've had the privilege of working with some non-Christians here in the last year, talking with them, getting to know them better. And I find it a whole lot harder to counsel or to talk to a non-Christian than I do a Christian, especially when they're going through struggles. Because with a Christian, I can tell them things were going to get better because I know they will. Because even if whatever they're going through ends in death, ultimately it will end in life. I can't say that to a non-Christian. I mean, in their case, there really is very little hope unless something changes. They don't believe in God. And because they don't believe in God, this dark, sin-filled, suffering-filled world is the closest they will ever get to heaven. And it's certainly not heaven. It doesn't take long to lose hope in this world. But we know the one who is hope. We know the one who is the light that shines in the darkness. We know the one that ensures us that this isn't the closest to heaven we're going to get. Instead, this is our hell. People need to know that there is better things out there than what we experience today. It is hard to talk with them. It's hard to, when I am counseling someone, I put my feelings into that, and I identify with them, and it's just, it's a pastoral heart of mine. And when I know that there's very little hope if something doesn't change in their faith, that's tough for me as a pastor. It really hurts me. But we always point them to Jesus, who is our hope. He can change our circumstances now. That's why we just prayed for that little baby. And He can change our circumstances in the future. And ultimately, if we believe in Him and we follow Him, we know that one day everything will be better. In a world that needs hope, there's a scene in Batman. I told you I was going to mention it. We're actually going to watch a clip from it. But it's from The Dark Knight Rises. I was a very big fan of Batman growing up. Actually, Elijah's been wearing my Batman costume from when I was a kid at my parents. He's going to be Spider-Man this week, though. I think he still likes Spider-Man a little bit more than Batman. But I love the Dark Knight series that came out. I think there's two or three movies in it. And Dark Knight Rises, there's a clip in there that I actually used the first time that I ever preached on Sunday morning. I used this clip. And so I was reminded of this clip as I was working through it today, and I went and looked through the clip, and I was like, why in the world did my pastor at the time let me show these scenes? Because that was not scenes. There was a lot of shooting, a lot of killing. That was probably shouldn't have been shown on Sunday morning in church. And we're not going to watch that part of it today. But the part that we're going to watch, give you some background. Bane, has taken over Gotham City. Batman had been imprisoned somewhere off in a hole. And he, no one could get out of that hole, and eventually Batman did. And he released the other prisoners from that hole. But at this time, the police are all underneath the ground, all locked up underneath the ground, except for a few that are still out and about, and they're in hiding because Bane, the villain, has taken over. It feels like the villain in our world has taken over. And it'd be easy for us to do just like the police officers that were still out did. It'd be easy for us to go and hide. There's a clip at the very end of this one that you'll see where he's like the assistant police commissioner or police captain or something. But Gordon, who you might recognize that name, he's the police commissioner. He had went to this guy's house beforehand and said, "What are you doing?" And the guy basically says, "There's no hope. I suggest you just go to your house, and we're just going to see whatever comes of this, what is what comes of it." There's no hope, though, because Batman's not there. And so at this point in the scene, you're going to see Gordon and you're going to see some other police officers being walked out onto the ice. And ultimately, the what's going to happen there is they're supposed to walk into the ice breaks, they die. So they're walking to their death. Batman had not been seen at this point, so it seems like there is no hope. But there's a point in there where Batman says, "Light it up." And I get chills thinking God telling us to light it up as well. Because then you'll see the Batman symbol light up, and when the Batman symbol lights up, it provides hope to that city. So let's watch this clip. See, when you also light it up, that last scene right there is actually where Bane sees it as well. So the guy before that was the police captain or assistant police commissioner. He sees it, and as the movie continued, he gathers the policemen that are still there, and can you turn the lights back up? I can't see them. They're waiting. Yeah, they're waiting for Batman to come out. Thought Batman was going to appear for a second. He goes and he gathers the remaining police officers, and they go out and they battle against the bad guys. And ultimately, of course, with Batman's help, they end up winning. Batman, the bad people end up losing. But when Batman told Gordon to light it up, Batman had done poured all the fuel and everything and made that bat symbol. It's like that bat symbol shining, and the city knows that there is hope. We need to be that shining light to tell people there is hope. And when you light up, guess what you tell the enemy? He has no hope. Because you know Bane was thinking, "Oh no, I thought I done beat this guy." And you know Satan felt the same way. When Jesus was crucified on that cross and he breathed his last breath, he was like, "Hey, I got it." And then 3 days later, he sees the disciples still living as God has called them to live. And he's like, "I thought I beat this guy, but there is hope." Why? Because Jesus is alive and because Jesus is working in and through us. So be that light that shines in the darkness. Provide hope. Do good deeds. Do the things God has called us to do. The second thing the sun, moon, and stars do is they serve as signs of the seasons. That's what it says in Genesis 1:14. "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and they shall serve as signs and for seasons and for days and years." Now, it looks like the signs are different from seasons. Signs can be translated as seasons as well. The ways I think they do appear as signs, though, is we know that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. So if I'm lost in the woods, I am going to look to where the sun is to determine which way is east and which way is west. The northern star used to be what would guide people at night. They look for where the star is. Same thing with the moon, which, funny story, when Sarah and I was coming back from revival at Randleman and First a few weeks ago, we were driving home and we could see something in the sky, and I said, "Look at the moon, it looks funny." And we was in the Hummer, so it told us which direction we were going in, and we were going west. And I said, "The moon rises in the west? Like, why?" And it was like a week later that someone said something about, "Have y'all seen the comet?" But man, we were tripping. We were like, "What? was like, I know the moon rises in the east, so why is it appearing in the west? But it was the comet. We saw the comet that was apparently in our sky here the last few weeks. But we were like, I know it rises in the east because I've watched it come up over the ocean before. But they provide some direction. That's where I think the signs come in, but the main point is the seasons. And to understand the seasons part, we got to go back to our pre-technology days. How did people living 3,000 years ago determine where they were at in the course of a year? They could tell based off the length of days. They could tell based off the waxing and waning of the moon, which determines our months. And ultimately, that's because the earth is slanted. The earth is slanted at an angle at 23 and a half degrees, and that is what gives us our seasons. If this was not an exact tilt of the earth, we would not only lose our seasons, but life itself, because the vapors from the oceans would move north and south, piling up continents of ice to the point that we would all be covered in ice. If our moon was closer, our tides would daily cover whole continents. That's crazy to think about. The polar regions would experience constant cold, and they would never stop growing. So the sun is the right distance apart, exactly the right distance apart. Because we're on a tilt, we experience different seasons, and the moon is exactly the right distance apart from the earth. That all points to the Lord of creation, an intelligent creator behind it all. But back 3,000 years ago, everyone grew their food, and their sign of when to grow their food was based off the positions of the sun, moon, and stars. So the sun, moon, and stars would serve as a sign of when they need to start plant their crop. One commentator noted said that the stellar bodies thus determine when we eat, when we work, and when we sleep. And all of this was set in motion perfectly on day 4 of creation. Let me talk about what this verse does not mean. It does not mean that we should look to the sun, moon, and stars as signs of what's going to happen in the future. It does not mean that we should practice astrology. Astrologers use the position of stars, planets, and the moon to predict events and to describe personalities. They create personalized horoscopes based on a person's birth date. Astrologers also believe that eclipses and lunar phases can influence events. Let me make this very clear. No Christian should be looking to their horoscope to see what's going to happen. It used to be in the Courier Tribune, I believe, and I didn't know what they were. I still don't exactly know what they are, but we should not be looking towards that type of stuff as a way of predicting the future, of the way of predicting our kids' personality, what they're going to be. And a lot of times what people are doing is they're looking to this stuff and they're living into it because they think that's who they're supposed to be. And that's not the case. In fact, here's what Jesus said in Deuteronomy, or God said in Deuteronomy 18:14. The nations you will dispose of listen to those who practice sorcery or divination. But as for you, the Lord your God has not permitted you to do so. And Jeremiah 10:2 says, this is what the Lord says. Do not learn the ways of the nations or be terrified by the signs in the heavens, though the nations are terrified by them. We should pay no attention to horoscopes, to fortune tellers. It's all fake. I was so saddened to see fortune tellers at the Fall Festival in Asheboro. There was a whole booth set up for it. And I'm like, y'all are just wasting your money. Even when we were walking through, a woman came up, and of course they pay attention to Elijah because of the red hair, and they say, when's his birthday? And I said, August the 9th. And she says, oh, he's a whatever. You're going to have your hands full. And I was just like, okay, and just kept walking. Because, no, we do have our hands full. But it's not because he was born on August the 9th. It's because he's a boy, and he takes after his mama. Astrology is an occult practice that needs to be avoided at all costs. Avoid astrology. Now, the sun, moon, and stars do serve as signs of the seasons. They tell us what season we're moving into, what time of the year it is, what time of the day it is, and what time of the night it is. It kind of reminds me, the job of the sun, moon, and stars kind of reminds me of the job of prophet in the Old Testament. They were God's representatives on earth. They would speak on God's behalf. They would interpret the problems of the day according to God's word, and they would help provide direction, just as the sun, moon, and stars help provide direction. Sun, moon, and stars also expose darkness, just as the prophets would expose darkness. And the sun, moon, and stars, depending on where they're at in the sky, would tell us what season we are about to enter into. And would prophets not do the same thing? We're going to read a little bit from Jeremiah later. Zach don't know that because I didn't tell him, but we're going to read a little bit from Jeremiah later. And in Jeremiah, he is telling Judah what is to come. He's telling them what season they are about to enter into. And so when I think about how this communicates to us, it reminds me that Christians serve as God's prophetic voice in this world, and therefore should serve as signs of spiritual seasons. Here's what Peter said in 2 Peter 1:9. It says, "We also have the prophetic message as something that is completely reliable, and you will do well to pay attention to it, as to a light shining in a dark place until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts." In other words, he's telling us we have a prophetic message, and he compares it to light shining in a dark place. We have a job to speak on God's behalf in the world today and to point people to him. We are that northern star that should be pointing people to Jesus. We are little Christ. We are Christ's ambassadors. We are his representatives. We should tell people which way is east, which way is west. Not, you know, literally, but figuratively. Which way leads you to God? Which way leads you away from God? We should be pointing people to him. But also, we should be telling the truth and shining the light and exposing the darkness. When the sun comes up, it exposes the night. When we should enter the room, or when we speak truth, we should expose the dark schemes of the enemy. And that's exactly what's happening right now. Those churches, those coffee shops, they closed or got sold because they were a part of the Wesleyan Church that refuses to cave on matters of biblical truth. If we stand on biblical truth, we're going to expose the schemes of the enemy, and you better believe the enemy is going to attack back. He doesn't want his schemes to be discovered. This is the last part I really want to focus on, though. We serve as signs of spiritual seasons. Guess what spiritual season we're about to enter into? Maybe during our lifetimes, probably during our lifetimes, maybe not during David's, but probably during mine. We're probably entering into the last days. And I don't think the common person who doesn't believe in God, who doesn't think that the Bible has any truth to us, to anything that's going to affect us, I don't think they're going to go read 2 Timothy 3:1 through 5, where it says there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And he tells Timothy to have nothing to do with such people. We can see all of that coming true, which means the Antichrist is coming. In fact, the Antichrist could be here right now, breathing the same air that we're breathing, preparing to act on Satan's behalf in this world. And when he does that, there's going to be so many people that thinks he's just God's servant that has come to bring peace on earth, and then he's going to turn on them. We know that that season is coming. So we need to be ready to tell people about the season that is to come. I am from the camp, and I will gladly admit to you if I'm wrong, but I'm from the camp that believes that we will be here through the tribulation, because the church, and this is one reason why I think it, the church is still going to be a prophetic voice during that time. I will gladly admit I'm wrong as we're floating up to heaven. But we need to be prepared to be here through the tribulation. And if we are, a lot of our job is going to be interpreting what's happening at the moment. A lot of our job is going to be telling them, hey, this guy's going to be great for the first 3.5 years. Second 3.5 years, though, it's going to be hell on earth. And you better turn your heart to God, because after 7 years, Jesus is returning. Not only this, but when we talk about spiritual seasons, guess what spiritual season all of us will enter into one day? Death. We will stop breathing and we will die. And you will enter into a new spiritual season at that moment, and it's either going to be a spiritual season of hell or it's going to be a spiritual season of heaven. We can interpret that, and we can tell them how to make sure it's a spiritual season of heaven or paradise. The job of prophet in the Old Testament and in today's world is not an easy one. Jeremiah, here's a painting of Jeremiah. He's called the weeping prophet, and right now in my Bible reading, I'm in Jeremiah. And hearing the things he had to say to God's people, to Judah, it's kind of tough. Judah was in their final years before the exile. And Jeremiah was sent by God to tell them, hey, because of your unrepentant hearts, you're going to be taken over. Babylon's going to take you captive. And after a certain amount of time, when you're ready to read this, you'll come back and I'll restore you. But telling people that their destination is not good, people don't love that. And Jeremiah didn't like delivering that. You know, I know Kamala Harris made a comment about, you know, you're at the wrong rally for the Christian things. And I saw Dennis Bass comment and say, and that should break our hearts that she said that. It should. That's the prophetic heart that Jeremiah had, which is why he's called the weeping prophet. We love this. This is probably the most popular verse from Jeremiah. I'm in Jeremiah 29. And you'll know it as soon as I start reading it. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope in the future. That's what people want to hear, right? That's the good part. That's, if the church is saying that, God loves you, God cares about you, everything's good, they're going to be like, yeah, I love hearing that. But we got to look at the context of what he said. Here is the rest of what Jeremiah said, starting in verse 10. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, in other words, after you've been captive for 70 years, I will come to you and I will fulfill my good promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call on me and you will come and pray to me and I will listen to you. You will seek me and you will find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the places from which I carried you into exile. In other words, you're going to have to leave this place and you're going to have to suffer for 70 years, but then I'll be there for you. People don't want to hear that 70 years part. People don't want to hear us say, here is the way that you make it to heaven. Here's how you make sure you're on God's side when God returns. Here's how you should be living as a person on this earth who's created the image of God, who God loves so much and that God desires to see part of his kingdom. This is what it looks like. And if you don't live this way, there's a place called hell, and that's the next spiritual season you're going into. People don't want to hear that, but we have got to speak the truth. No matter what. We've got to be that prophetic voice. We've got to be that light that shines in the darkness. And so I'm not going to forgo the last song today, because once again, the application for us is not necessarily about worshiping. The application for us is about living. To do good deeds, let our light shine, and to be a prophetic voice in today's world, in a world that doesn't want to hear it. So let's pray.